When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Claret and Blue. We've lined up another special guest for you this week. It's the one, the only, Andy Vyman. How are you, Andy?
I'm doing good, thanks, yeah. I'm doing all right. How are you?
Yeah, good. I know that we've kind of managed to get hold of you because you're, well, we're all, the whole world's on lockdown at the moment, but you're, I don't know, convalescent, I suppose, at the moment, recovering. You've done your ACL, haven't you?
Yeah, I did it nearly 3 weeks ago now, yeah. I had my surgery 11 days ago. So yeah, I'm still at home, so I'm free all day. I'm just lying on the sofa, really.
I was going to ask, what does a normal day at home look like then for you? I know the kids are at school.
To be honest, at the minute, it's pretty boring. I'm literally icing my knee every 2 hours and trying to read books or watch telly. My daughter's only two, so she's only going to nursery 3 days a week. So yesterday she was at home, so that's a little bit busier. And then obviously when my son comes home from school, then that's when the work starts really. But like I say, at the minute, I can't do much, so it's my wife who's doing all the work, so I'm just watching.
Right, we're going to take you right back to the beginning, Andy, when you were a young boy in Austria. Was it always football from the moment you could walk?
I think so, yes. I think my parents used to do athletics. So when I was about 5, 6, I started doing that a little bit, to be fair. But my dad used to then play semi-professional football when I was born. So to be fair, from the moment I was like 2 years old, I was always on the football pitch, and to tell me, I always had a ball in my hand. So yeah, I was always really into football. And I think it was about 6 or 7 when I then started joining the club.
What athletics did your mum and dad do? What were their main disciplines?
They both did hurdles. So I think women is 100 metres and men's is 110 metres. So both of them did that same discipline.
In terms of parents then, were they kind of quite pushy and competitive? Did dad kind of have high standards for you? Or
no, I wouldn't say they were pushy. I think, yeah, once I said I wanted to be a footballer, they obviously said I have to like dedicate myself to it if I really want it. But there was never like really a point where they said, no, you have to do this. It was always like, if I want it, if I enjoy doing it, then obviously go for it.
Was there ever a kind of fallback option for you? If you weren't going to make the grade as a professional footballer, were you still kind of, were you good at school? Was there anything else that you're interested in?
I think I was quite good in school, to be honest. I was always quite clever in school and got quite good grades. But obviously, I came to England when I was 15, so I had to leave school in Austria. And from that moment, to be fair, it was all about football. I'd like to think if it wouldn't have worked out, I would have been clever enough to get a decent job. But I haven't really thought about what job that would have been, to be honest.
In terms of you playing football for a team for the first time, were you always a centre forward?
Not really. I remember when I was about, I was always on the wing, to be honest, to start with, because I was like one of the quickest. So I was just running up and down when I was younger. And then in Austria, you start about, when you're about 12, 13 years old, you start getting into like, obviously I'm from Vienna. So like in Austria, there's 9 different kind of areas that you play against. It's like Vienna, Carinthia's one, like different, like you got in England, the West Midlands or East Midlands. So you get like the best players from that area and play against each other. And I actually started off as a centre half. I think again, I think that was actually, obviously because everyone was pretty much the same height. It was more like, because I was one of the quickest at the back. And I remember then there was one game when our striker was injured and I went up front and I scored 4 goals. And literally from that moment, I played up front, yeah.
Do you think playing centre-half even for a small amount of time, has that helped you in a way? Because you kind of understand that position as well, the position that you're up against.
Maybe, yeah, maybe. I think, to be honest, over the years, I've played pretty much every position, I think. So I think I've got that understanding of how football works. I can play any position, but I think centre-half will be a bit too much for me right now.
So tell us about, you know, as fans, we imagine, we like to think that our football club has got scouts in every single corner of the globe looking at all the talent. But how does a young lad from Austria suddenly find his way to Birmingham?
How it happened was I played for, I think it was Austria, I don't know if it was under 15s or 16s. And I remember my agent, he's not my agent now, I switched agent a couple of years ago, but he was my agent for like near 15 years. He called the house phone, like my parents' house phone. I don't know how he got the number, but he basically said, yeah, that he's involved with Aston Villa, that they've asked him if I to see me at that tournament for Austria under 16s. And obviously in Austria, you got the winter break. So if I was interested just for a week in January when I'm on holiday, like to come and have a week's trial. And again, my parents being sportsmen, they said, like, you've got nothing to lose, just go for it, have a week there and see what it's like, if you like it. And yeah, that's how it started, really. I came over for a week and really enjoyed it. And I think we had a game at the end of it and I did pretty well. And they said, if I want to sign, pretty much there and then.
Then be honest now, did you know much about Aston Villa?
No, to be honest, I didn't. I think I was probably just getting to that age where I then started watching more TV and started watching the Premier League. Because in Austria, it's more, obviously, you see the German Bundesliga and the Austrian League was probably the two leagues that you really see on TV. And it wasn't until like Sky kind of came out that you could watch the Premier League. So obviously, I knew the like Manchester United and Liverpool's, but about Aston Villa, I didn't really know that many players, to be honest. But obviously, once I've had the trial, I then looked into it.
So talk us through what it's like. So as a 15-year-old boy, and you're coming across to England, had you been to England before at all?
I hadn't, no, never. So I remember before I started, before the week before pre-season started as a first-year scholar, we went to London for a week. So we had like a week's holiday in London just to see London and then got a train to Birmingham. And obviously then I started training like the next day, yeah.
So did your parents come over with you the first time or just stick you on a plane?
Yeah, no, they came. My parents and my brother came for the week in London. And then I think they were here for probably a couple of days when I started. But obviously I was at Diggs straight away. So they were here. And then I think in the first year it was something like, my parents had four or five free flights back over to like visit me and I had four or five back home. So probably saw them every couple of months. So it wasn't like I was literally gone. I was always coming back home as well.
So what, it must have been a bit of a culture shock. I've been lucky enough to go to Vienna a couple of times, actually with Villa in Europe. Lovely city, lovely architecture and stuff. What were your first impressions of Birmingham?
I think people always say to me how beautiful Vienna is, but I think because I'm from the city, it's like I'm used to it, so I don't see it that way, to be honest. Birmingham, I love it. Obviously, I still live in Solihull now, so obviously I'm really, really close to like the area, but it's not the prettiest of cities, should we say that? But it's obviously like really close to my heart. So yeah, I've had a great time since I've come here.
So when you first arrived, who did you lodge with? Did they put you with kind of a landlady and some of the other lads?
Yes, I went to like a Diggs, yeah. And do you remember Dominic Hofbauer?
I remember the name.
Remember the name, yeah. So he came from Austria as well at the same time as me. So we signed at the same time. So I think that probably made it a little bit easier because obviously I had someone there who, well, he's from Austria and I was able to speak German with, and we lived at the same dig, so that's obviously the one I hang out the most with.
I know you've been here probably, what, half your life now. I kind of see you as a bit of an adopted Brummie anyway. So did you just kind of settle in quickly? Because I know you became friends with the likes of Adam McGurk, I think, and Barry Bannon and Kieran and Mark. Did it feel natural or did you get homesick at first?
No, it did, to be fair. I think, like you say, it literally, there's not one point where I looked back and thought, oh, I want to go back home or I don't like it. Yeah, from the moment I came here, I really, really enjoyed it. And like I say, I met my wife here and I still, my house is in Dorwich by Solihull. So I'm still in the area and I've made great friends over the years. And yeah, there's not one point where I'd say regret my decision coming here at all.
So tell us what life's like as a kind of as a young lad coming through the academy. What's a day like? Is it kind of, did you still have to pick up a bit of schooling over here after training and that kind of thing?
Yeah, a normal day was like, I think it was like 8:30 in the morning. We'd get picked up from like St. Caulfield. There'd be a minibus picking us up, taking us to training. And then obviously before training, we'd have to clean all the boots for the first team players, get ready like the balls or bibs or whatever they needed for training. And then, yeah, 2 days a week we had college, I think it was. It was like a Tuesday or Thursday afternoon for 2 or 3 hours. I can't remember, but yeah, we had to do that. And yeah, it was quite long days to be fair. So we were in from 9 o'clock to pretty much 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon after we finished everything. So yeah, it took up most of our time anyway. So we weren't that bored at home, to be honest.
That is a long day for a footballer. You're only normally used to working 2 hour days, isn't it?
Exactly. That's it. No, 2 hours max.
Whose boots did you have to clean?
But I had to clean the coach's boots, like the under 18s. I had to clean Tony McAndrews, I remember. And who's the other one? I can't remember the other one, to be honest. I remember it was Tony McAndrew, and then it was like another coach. So I didn't have a players, unfortunately.
They had a rule, didn't they, the youth team coaches, that you could only have black football boots anyway when you were in the academy. Is that right?
Yeah, so everyone had to wear black boots. And I remember I was getting sent boots from Nike, and obviously you can't really choose what colour they send you. So I had to, a couple of times, a few of the boys as well had to get like the marker pens and black them out, and the boot vanish, and try and get them all black. And so we're allowed to train in them.
That's brilliant, that is. You've got this idea of all you being kind of flash young things, and you're actually colouring in your football boots with a marker pen. Love that.
Yeah. No, to be fair, in the youth team, I think we had, it was good. I think obviously we had Tony McAndrew, and he was not strict, but he had his ideas what we should do and stuff. And I think that's how, well, most of my youth team, we've all kind of still playing now, I think, in the league. So obviously it's stood us in very good stead, obviously, for the future, I think.
You're talking about 2005, are you? Something like that? 2004, 5?
6, I think it was.
2006. So would it have been Martin O'Neill, yeah, would have been in charge by then of the first team? Or?
Yeah, Martin O'Neill was the manager, yeah.
And what was it like being around the group of first team players? Because there'd still been some big players there, wouldn't there?
My first year when I came, obviously, I think my first season there, the first year, was where we finished, obviously we finished 6th, but I think it was the season, I don't know if you remember, it was like March time or something, they were still in 4th, so it was really close to getting the Champions League. So obviously we had all like big players, like John Carew was there, Ashley Young, Gareth Barry was still there, Petrov, so yeah, really, really big players. And obviously that was brilliant, just watching them. And then I think in my second season was when I then started training with them a little bit. So that was obviously, that was amazing.
We've asked a few people who we've had on if they remember what their first paycheck was and what they spent it on. Can you remember the first time that you kind of thought, actually, I'm earning money as a footballer now, I'm going to go and go splash out on something?
Well, I think as a scholar, I think, I might be wrong, but I think it was £90 a week, I think. The first one, I think. So yeah, well then again we lived at Diggs, so I had nothing to spend my money on, to be honest. I remember the only things we spent it on was a Blockbuster. We used to go and get some DVDs and pick and mix for the Diggs and watch that. That's pretty much all we did, to be honest, because the training, came home and sat in the room playing PlayStation or watching DVDs.
That's brilliant. So when was it that you felt that you were making strides, you were doing well with the youth team and the reserves? When did you feel like you had kind of really got a chance of breaking through?
I think I had a taste in my second year when we went to the Peace Cup. Obviously, there was a lot of injuries and there was like a lot of young players playing there. And obviously, I remember one game I'll always remember is we played Juventus in the final, and like I started, and obviously we won on penalties in the end. So like that was a great day for me personally, because I think I was only like 17. But then pretty much after that, I wasn't really involved again once the season started. And then it was the following pre-season, I think Martin O'Neill then left, and obviously Kev McDonald took over, and he was obviously the one I was with in the reserves for the last 3-4 years, and he gave me my debut then on the first day of the season, and yeah, obviously that was an amazing day.
I can't have you mentioning the Peace Cup and that final without. Do you remember Del Piero's penalty?
Yeah, I remember. He rolled it down the middle, didn't he? Guzan saved it. No, that was brilliant because I think we had so many young players playing that we obviously no one expected us to win there. They had, like you said, Del Piero. I think Buffon played, Camavanese. So they had like brilliant players playing. So I think when we looked across from and walking out, thinking this could be tough. But obviously finished 0-0, I think it was, and then we won on penalties. So yeah, that was a great experience.
I just remember seeing Barry Bannon at the airport with really bad sunburn, and you're all winding him up. He got like this big bright red face.
Oh yeah, he always does that. To be fair, every time he's in the sun, he gets like sunburn on his nose.
Fast forward, it was the following summer. Martin O'Neill's gone. Kev's placed in temporary charge. Did you get like a minute or two at the end against that? I think Villa beat West Ham, didn't they, on the opening day?
It was West Ham. Yeah, I think it was the last 3 minutes or something. I think we were 3-0 up, and I remember it was Ashley Young came on for. Yeah, obviously I'll never forget that day. It was brilliant. Even though it was only 3 or 4 minutes, it was, yeah, just a great, great experience.
On the night, because a couple of you made your debuts, all out on the lash down Michu, and Barry got a round of champagne. I think he played 1 minute in the Premier League and he bought a round of champagne to virtually the whole club. Were you there that night? I can't remember.
Probably, if he was there. But I can't remember that, to be honest. But yeah, if he says... I was probably there, yeah. I'm not going to lie.
I won't pry too much about your kind of your nights out and stuff, but where would you have used to hang around with the lads at that age?
Yeah, probably that was the nightclub to go to if we went out. It was probably Michu. And then obviously we all lived around Sutton, so I think it was Apple back in the day. It was called by Mia Green, was it? Where we like, if we went for like a beer or two. I think that was the places we went to, yeah.
So who became your best mates amongst that group when it didn't work out for Dominic?
I think there's a few of us, to be honest. We're still in regular contact now. Obviously, there's like you've mentioned Baz, and then there's obviously Mark, Kieran Clark, James Collins. Is at Luton now? Not Ginger James Collins, the younger one. Yeah, all of Adam McGurk, you mentioned him earlier. He's still in our we've got like a WhatsApp group chat. So, yeah, that's probably the 5-6 who we still speak to now and I'm still close friends with.
And so we've gone from that West Ham game to you playing a couple of minutes. And then it was the homecoming, wasn't it, that didn't quite go according to plan when you back to Rapid Vienna. And go on, you tell us, talk us through your memories of that game.
Yeah, obviously, you've obviously gone from the high on the Saturday to making your debut. And then 4 days later, we went to Vienna. And then my whole family was there for that one. And again, I think it was like the 80th minute I came on. I think it was the 82nd minute I got stretched off, which obviously wasn't nice. I think I had done my ankle ligaments and then I was out for like 4 or 5 months. So obviously it was, yeah, from being up there pretty low again straight 4 days later.
Your own fans had started kind of throwing stuff on there and spitting and stuff like that. Was that... Well, that can't have been nice.
No, it wasn't, obviously. I was obviously very disappointed that I got injured in the first place. Obviously, then getting stuff thrown at you was nice. But it didn't have anything to do with me being Austrian or anything. I think they were just crazy. It would have done it to anyone, to be honest, I think. When I was younger, I used to go and watch the games there and be in that stand and stuff. So the atmosphere is great. But yeah, there's a few... We would take it too far a few times, I think. Obviously, at the time, I didn't know how bad the injury was, but then when we landed back in England, obviously, I had like a scan and stuff, and I pretty much ruptured every ligament in my ankle, I think. And obviously, I needed surgery. So, yeah, like I say, from like within 4 days from making your Premier League debut to then being told you're out for, well, until January, pretty much, obviously, wasn't nice.
And what did your parents and your family say to you after that game?
Yeah, they were gutted, obviously, because they all, literally, I think there was about 20 people there watching the game. And obviously, it wasn't nice for them as well, seeing stuff getting thrown at me and stuff. So they were all disappointed. But yeah, there's obviously nothing you can do after that. It's just about getting fit again.
They weren't throwing stuff, were they?
So, I don't know, maybe. I've not asked them, but actually, they might have.
Once you got fit again, did you have to kind of go out on loan then? Is that when you went to...
Yeah, so I think, obviously, I was 19 at the time. And then, obviously, Kevin, like, left, and then Julio came in. I wasn't fit to train or anything until about I think it was at the start of January, I started playing a couple of reserve games again. And yeah, Watford, I think they were interested in August, I think, to take me on loan. And yeah, I just tried to get fit, played a few reserve games, and it was Malky Mackay was the manager at the time. And obviously, yeah, I wanted to do that to try and play some games. And I think that was a great experience for me. I was still 19, and obviously I went there from January to the end of the season. Playing in the Championship at 19 obviously was great for me to get that kind of men's football into you. I literally didn't know anyone at Watford when I went there. But yeah, the boys were great there. I really enjoyed my time at Watford, and I think it helped me a lot because obviously, like, I think everyone else tell you, playing for the reserves and stuff is great, but when it's actually about 3 points and you can see how much is on the line for the club to win or lose a game, it makes you better player and gives you a lot of experience, and you see what football's actually like.
When you come back, is it when McLeish is then in, you know, by the time you really get your next chance, Alex McLeish is manager, I believe. And if I can remember rightly, Darren Bent got injured, Robbie Keane went back to LA Galaxy, and that kind of opened up an opportunity for you. Is that what happened?
Yeah, so I came back, so I went from January to the end of the season, and then I remember I went away with Austria in August for the Under 20 World Cup, it was. So I kind of missed the start of the season when Alex McLeish was the manager. And then I came back and I went back to Watford on loan. Actually, like, it was meant to be a season-long loan again. But I was only there for 3 games, and then they called me back. Aston Villa called me back because they had a few injuries. And I started then. That must have been like October time. Like coming off the bench for like the last 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And then, like you said, in January, it was Robbie Keane came. And then again, maybe 5 minutes at the end now and then. And then, yeah, Benty got injured, I remember. Robbie went back. And then I think it was March is obviously the day when it really started. That was the longest I came on. It was against Fulham. It was like 20 minutes before the end. And obviously that was the day I got my first goal. And after that game is when it really kicked on, and I pretty much started playing every game to the end of the season.
So how do you remember that goal then? I'm sure you handled it, didn't you? It was handball, wasn't it? Come on, be honest.
I don't think it was. I don't know how it wasn't, because I was obviously ahead of it and it bounced back. And yeah, I tried everything not to touch it in my hand. I can't just describe the feeling, to be honest. It was like, obviously, I'll never forget the day. It was amazing. It was the last minute, obviously, as well, to get the winner, your first goal. Yeah, it was brilliant.
I think I'm right in thinking that Villa hardly won any games in, you know, I think that might have been their first win in 10 or something like that. And then I think Villa stayed up just by kind of drawing a lot of games towards the end of the season. That was a massive, massive goal, wasn't it? Not only for you personally, but for the football club that season.
Yeah, there was a little bit of unrest, I think, because we didn't do well for quite, like you said, I can't remember how many games it was, but there's a few games that we didn't win. And yeah, like you say, for me personally, it was unbelievable. But I think for the team, it was a great lift to get a winner in the last minute. And then, yeah, I think we got a couple more wins. And yeah, I think we finished 15th or something, if I'm right, in the end. So we stayed up comfortably enough. And yeah, and then obviously that's when I started kicking on after that.
I think I'm right in saying that after that Fulham game, you also scored against Stoke. And I went and watched that Stoke goal on YouTube last night, and it was a nice little give and go with Stephen. I think Lehigh gives you the ball, then you give it to Ireland. We'll play 1-2 with Stephen Ireland, and then just kind of curl it, you know, open your body up and curl it into the top corner. Is that, I'm probably missing some great goals that you scored for Villa here, but is that the best goal you scored in terms of, you know, to look at in terms of the beauty of it?
Probably, yes. I wouldn't say it's my favourite one. Obviously, we'll get to that later, I'm sure. But yeah, it's probably the nicest one to look at, yeah, I would say.
So after the Stoke game, we know Alex McLeish came and went. And Paul Lambert came in the following year and just seemed to really, you know, I'm not giving him all the credit, because it was you as well. Your career really lifted off from that moment when Lambert arrived?
Yes, I think it did. I think that's, like, I think at the start of the season I wasn't starting. I think it was about end of September, maybe start of October, when I think it was like a League Cup game, I think it was Swindon, if I'm right, where I started. And then I think we won. And then, to be fair, he said, like, you deserve to play again. And I think from that moment on, I think I started pretty much every game for the rest of the season. And obviously, yeah, when he was the manager, there's no denying that. I think that was the best time of my career at Villa that I had. To be honest, I think obviously there's me, Gabby and Christian who played up front, and I think we just kind of clicked. I think we had Christian, obviously he was unbelievable. Like when he first came, his first season, holding the ball up, scoring goals out of nowhere. Then obviously we had Gabby, who again that season was brilliant with his pace and getting at people and stuff. And then I think I was on the other side just trying to work hard kind of and get in the box next to Christian and work off his knockdowns. And it was just, I think it just clicked between the three of us. And yeah, we had a great time together.
What was Christian like as a personality? Because we didn't get to really, really know him. What was he like? Was he a good lad?
Yeah, he was. He was quiet around the ground. But he was always having a laugh, to be fair. He was always nice to speak to. He wasn't like one of the loudest in the change room, but he was definitely like, you could definitely have a laugh with him, and he was always like joking around. And I think for him coming from Belgium and the way he started his career in England was probably better than he thought he would. And he was brilliant to play with. Like I always say, that was the best striker I've played with, as in how good he was when I played with him.
And what about Gabby? Would you ever, do you reckon you could beat, you could, well, you probably could now, but you reckon you could beat him in a race?
No chance. I think I'm quick, but Gabby at that time was like, yeah, he was so fast. I mean, like you say, he played for like many, many years before I even started playing, and they tell me he was even faster back then. So yeah, he was great. He was great.
You say Christian wasn't one of the loudest voices in the dressing room, but Gabby must have been, hadn't he?
Yeah, still is now, isn't he? He does all his, he's on the radio now, so that suits him. But no, he was always, obviously, you could hear Gabby's laugh from a mile away.
Did he tend to be the ringleader with all the kind of pranks and stuff?
Yeah, Gabby, and then obviously Shay came then, and Shay was involved in a few. And yeah, the Delphi was always trying to play pranks. Brad got involved a little bit, Brad Guzan. So yeah, there was a few, to be fair, of the older boys who did a bit of the fun stuff. For the one I remember is obviously the one when, was it Shay who left the fish in Delphi's car? have you heard that one?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I think that I remember that one. Yeah, that's probably the one I say is the best one, when they went to an away game and he left, obviously, the fish underneath his bonnet, I think it was. That was good. That was a good one.
Must be a nightmare, you know, in dressing rooms, just not knowing who's going to strike next.
I think it wasn't that bad, but I think if you did something, you kind of know you have to look behind, seeing, because you know you're going to get it back. So I stayed out of it. I was all right.
So back on that season, though, you obviously, I think you finished with 12 goals that year, and the brace against Man United, I think, came that year, didn't it? Is that the one when Benteke left Chris Smalling on his backside and he set you up?
Yeah, it was, yeah, when he like kind of shoulder barged him and he went flying, yeah. We went 2-0 up, and I think it was Hernandez came on at half-time, and I think it didn't go down as a hat-trick, because I think it was an own goal, I think, but obviously he came on at half-time and pretty much got a hat-trick to win the game. So that was, yeah, very frustrating, because obviously, you never score two goals against United, really, and to be then on the losing side was obviously a bit frustrating.
So you said a moment ago that we'd come to your favourite goal. I might be wrong, but was it at Anfield or not? Or
I think I've got a couple who I was, like, we talked about my first goal. Obviously, that was the one I'll never forget, because obviously it was my first goal for Villa. Anfield, I've got the one where Christian backheeled it to me. That was a nice move. But obviously, I think the one for most fans will probably see as well was the win against Man City. Obviously, when there's a picture of me in front of the whole end celebrating again, that I'll never forget that picture. I can't get it out of my head, obviously, thinking about it.
Have you got a copy of that picture?
I've got one, yes, not in the house, but my parents have got it, like, in the living room, a big, like, I don't know how long, but it's quite big in like above their dining table. So yeah, that's a great picture.
I think it's probably one of the most iconic Villa pitches of recent years. It was the winner, wasn't it? I think I remember.
Yeah, it was.
Big boot up by Guzan, and it was helped on, I think, by Kozak potentially. And it seemed to take ages to get. You just had the slightest of touches, and it rolled it past Joe Hart. And you were the, I think you were the only person in the ground who was convinced it was going to go in, because you ran away to celebrate before it crossed the line.
Obviously, I've seen Joe Hart came out, and I just tried to flick it past him and then tap it in the net. But obviously, I got a bigger touch on it than I thought I would. I kind of chased after it for a few yards, and then I seen the defender and I thought, he's not getting there. And then, I thought that's going in. And then obviously I just set off celebrating. And even then, I think there's that picture. And then I turned around and there's no one there, because I was obviously so far ahead of everyone. And then to kind of turn back to the crowd, and then it took a few seconds for everyone to come to me to celebrate. But yeah, that was a great day.
Tell us what that feels like, because, I've been on that from the other side, being in the halt end at moments like that. But to actually be the man who kind of is at the centre of that, what does that feel? Do you feel like you're kind of floating off the ground? Or?
Yeah, it's a surreal feeling. I think obviously that in that picture as well, what's so good about it, I think you can see the expressions in all the fans. Obviously, you see me from behind the fans, you see how much it means to them. And when you stand there and look at the crowd and you see about, I don't know, how many fit in the whole end, 3,000-4,000 people right in front of you, and you see them all going crazy. I think there's no better feeling in the world.
That season, it seemed to keep on rolling, and it seemed that, like you said, yourself, Gabby and Christian Benteke were kind of undroppable. Did you feel like that was the time, that you were really going to kind of kick on from there?
Yeah, I think obviously that first season, I was still on my reserve team contract, and then I did really well that season, and I obviously got a new contract, and I thought that we can kick on here. I think we had a really young team, and I thought that we could grow into a decent team. Obviously, then the second season didn't go as well as the first one did. I'm not denying that I wanted it to go better, but I still played a lot of games. I just think, I don't know, it was that teams worked us out a little bit, because it was obviously the same front three maybe every game, and people kind of knew what they were coming against maybe, but it didn't obviously work as well as it did in the first season.
So, and again, forgive my ignorance, but when we get players on, we try and get a bit of kind of insight into how these things work. We talk about strikers and goal bonuses. Do they exist?
If they do, I've never had one. So I think they do, maybe, but yeah, I've never had one, so I'm not one of the lucky ones.
You need to get yourself a new agent again, clearly.
I know, yeah, you're not wrong.
on that season again, when there were the 12 goals, I think there were some, as well as the Man United brace, the goal at Liverpool, I think, am I right in thinking you scored in the 6-1 against Sunderland as well, I think. You scored in the 3-2 against QPR. I think you even scored away at Arsenal, which was a defeat. What does it do for you? For your confidence? Do you suddenly think it feels a bit strange at first, and then you suddenly think, actually, I belong here, I can do this? Is that the way it goes? Or?
I think so, yes. I think at first, when you come through as a young player, you kind of, well, that's what I felt like anyway. You kind of think, are you good enough to actually, what do the other players think of you when you come through? Do they think you're good enough? Do you think, what's he doing here? And then when you obviously have a bit of success and you start playing, and you kind of think, yeah, I deserve to be here, and your confidence grows, and you just enjoy being around. And I talk, obviously at Villa, playing at Villa Park every week was amazing. I think that season, 21, probably 21, playing week in, week out was just unbelievable. And then you think, yeah, I never want this to end, really.
I presume the flip side of that is that life changes a little bit away from football, in terms of you probably have to practice your autograph, and you probably can't go for a meal or a pint anymore without being noticed. How did you cope with that, the fame of being a Premier League player?
Yeah, I think it all happened quite quickly, to be fair, in my case. Like I said, probably from that, I play maybe 5 or 10 minutes now and then, and then from that Fulham goal, I started playing every game pretty much. So yeah, it was a change, I think, especially I was living in Sutton at the time, and where you walking around, everyone, you can see everyone looking at you, and they recognize you, which is obviously a nice feeling, because you kind of get a bit of pride knowing that you've obviously achieved something, that they recognize you, and then signing autographs. I've always enjoyed it. I think that's why you want to be a footballer, so people do recognise you. And obviously, I know I was, when I was younger, like I told you earlier, I used to go to watch Rapid Vienna, and for me, seeing them, I know what like other people felt like when they asked me for autographs. So it was, yeah, it was always, I didn't feel like harassed or anything. It was just, it was nice, and I was happy to do it.
Were you being recognised when you went back home to Austria then, or was it still, you could still kind of get away, you know, being a bit more anonymous?
No, I think even now, if I go back, I probably wouldn't be recognised that much, to be honest. Yeah, it's definitely more over in England. Yeah, in Austria, I think not many people would recognise me, to be honest, which is obviously nice if I go home and I can spend time with my family and do whatever I want.
So without being too nosy, where did you meet your wife then? Is she a Brummie girl?
Yeah, she's from Solihull, yeah. Met her in Meechu.
Oh, did you?
So, I met her in Meechu. I told her I was a painter and decorator when I first met her. So, and she didn't have a clue. She still doesn't know much about football now, to be honest. So, yeah, she obviously believed me for a couple of weeks. And then her brother's a big Villa fan, so he always said that he's Andy Ryman, he's not a painter. And then that's how she found out, to be honest.
So what was the purpose of doing that? So she wasn't a kind of, you know, a wag chasing footballers. It was just a kind of for you.
Yeah, maybe. I think, I don't know. I always feel like, not embarrassed, but kind of, if people ask me what you do, I don't know. I just don't like saying I'm a footballer. I don't know why, to be honest. I think people might think, is he talking rubbish, or is he big time or whatever? But I just say that I'm a painter, and she obviously, she didn't have a clue, and that's how we started talking. And obviously, I'm with her now.
So what did she show a brother a picture of you or something, and he exposed it? Or
I think so. I think like she tells a funny story, because like that's how much she hasn't got a clue about football. It was the day after I met her, I went away with the national team. And I got a number, and I was texting her, and I had to say, yeah, I'm going away with the, like, to Austria, like to the nationals. And then like she thought I was like an international painter or something like that. So she was telling her brother, I think, and showed her WhatsApp picture. But yeah, I started speaking to him the last couple of weeks, and then he obviously recognized me straight away. And then she asked me, and I was like, yeah, I play football.
That's brilliant. Are you any good at painting?
No, I've never done any painting in my life.
You've been married a few years now, and you've got two young kids. How old are your kids now, Andy?
My son's 5. He'll be 6 in January, and my daughter's 2. She'll be 3 in February. So, yeah.
Have they shown it? I know that the little one's a bit too young, but has your lad shown any kind of footballing tendencies? Does he like having a kick around in the garden?
Not really, to be honest. When we were in lockdown, he wanted to play a little bit, but he's very sporty, to be fair. He's like, he's good at like every sport he does. He's like either swimming and tennis, and like we try and keep him as sporty as we can, but I haven't pushed him into football at all, to be honest.
So picking back up on your career, so we had that brilliant year 2012-13. You're flying, and then hoping that's going to carry on until 2014-15. Like you said, I think you were still quite a regular starter in 2014-15. Was it when Tim Sherwood arrived towards the back end of that season that you started to realise that you might have to look elsewhere? Or
I think so, yes. I think up until like Paul Lambert obviously left, I think it was in February, I think. I pretty much again played every game or near enough every game, and then when Tim Sherwood came in, I think I didn't start one game, so obviously kind of to me obviously it looked like I wasn't really in his plans. And obviously the one that hurt me the most, which I'll tell openly, was the cup final, because I've been involved on the bench coming on or being at least on the bench every single game, like I didn't miss one game all season. I don't think I missed a training session all season. And then obviously we got to the cup final, and obviously coming through the youth team, it was massive. And yeah, I missed out. I wasn't even on the bench. So that was the one that hurt me the most. And obviously from that moment, kind of, I was like, yeah, I don't see a future here if he's just the manager, to be honest.
Did you travel down in the team hotel for the cup final?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I think there was 20 in the squad, and obviously two of us missed out. I think it was Matty Loughton who missed out as well, I think. So yeah, but yeah, obviously that hurt me a lot, to be honest, because it was obviously for Villa, for me, it was a big day, and like I said, I didn't miss a game or a training session, and then to be left out of that game was, yeah, it wasn't nice.
Did Tim Sherwood pull you aside at any time to talk about why you weren't kind of in his plans?
I went to see him. I think it wasn't actually about any football reason. I think it was, if I remember right, it was my wife's granddad, I think, his funeral. So I kind of went to see him. I think it was like a week before the season finished, to ask if obviously I can have the day off and go to the funeral. And then we started talking a little bit about myself and my how it's going and stuff. And I think he just said he thinks it's like I kind of need a change, change of scenery. And obviously then I knew kind of that, yeah, it's, if the manager says that to you, it's time to go.
So with that conversation and with the disappointment of the cup final, did it take a lot of time for you to kind of process it in your own mind and to come to terms with it? Or were you quite good at saying, right, okay, one adventure's gone, let's start the next one?
From the moment, like I said, when we talked earlier, from the moment I actually started playing in the first team, I think I always played. So I wasn't good being on the bench. It just, like, I wasn't happy. So kind of knowing that I wasn't going to play, I wasn't really thinking about, like, staying, because obviously, like I said, the manager said, I think I need a new challenge and I need a change. So I wasn't too disappointed. I was more looking forward to like trying to get a move and playing again, because like every footballer tell you, it doesn't matter how long your contract is, if you're not playing, you're not happy. And obviously I wasn't, so I wanted to move on as quickly as possible, to be honest.
So without making you think back about it too much, that cup final, you just sat on the bench and watched, I presume. That must have been a fairly, well, it was depressing watching from the stands. It must have been a fairly depressing afternoon for you.
Yeah, well, I wasn't even on the bench. I was behind the bench in my suit watching it. But yeah, it was obviously great getting there. The semi-final was a great day, obviously. Yeah, but obviously Arsenal were just too good for us on the day in the final. That, yeah, it was, yeah, doubly disappointing that we didn't win it, and that obviously I didn't even make bench.
So after that then, is it a case of your kind of agent putting out the feelers for other clubs, letting people know that you might be available, and then you just waiting to see what develops?
It all happened pretty quick, to be honest. There was a few clubs who called my agent straight away when, obviously, I told my agent that I kind of not in the plans. I think it was literally, I think this cup final is always like the last weekend of May, isn't it? So it must have been, I don't know, 28th of May or something. And then by early June, I was already like close to signing for Derby. So it happened really quick, because like, luckily, like I say, I played pretty much for the last three seasons every game. So my name kind of was still out there, and I still had a good reputation. So I had a few clubs to choose from. And for me, looking at it, Derby was the best one. Again, didn't work out as I wanted to, because we didn't get promoted, which was obviously the plan. But from my point of view, yeah, that was the best move for me.
And so the day when it comes to kind of clear out your locker at Bodymore and say farewell, what's that like?
Yeah, again, I didn't really have it like that, because the season was finished and it was in June and everyone obviously was on holidays. And for me as well, I think it was... I was in Portugal on holiday when they finally agreed a fee with Derby, and I kind of just flew back for the day, did my medical, signed, flew back to Portugal. And then obviously, luckily, like I say, my house is in Dorwich. So I just literally quickly drove to a training ground at Villa, grabbed my stuff. And obviously the only people I saw was like the security people, grabbed my stuff, got my boots and set off. And then obviously I texted everyone and everyone sent me a text. But yeah, I didn't actually see everyone when I was going in.
It's quite sad, that, isn't it? Because in other jobs, in other professions, you'd have a big leaving do when there'd be a party and all that kind of thing. But in football, it's just, all right, then, see ya. Thanks for that. See you later.
Yeah, that's what it was at Villa. To be fair, Derby, when I left Derby to Bristol, it was kind of, I was training in the morning when it got agreed and stuff. And then they all gave me, like, all the boys were in the change room. I was saying bye to everyone. So that was a little bit different. But yeah, when I left Villa, it was literally, it was in June. It was in the summer holiday. So there's no one there.
I think I've read some quotes from when you joined Derby and left Villa from you, and I think you said, I think you described it really nicely, actually, as saying, I kind of leave with a teardrop in my eye. Did it feel like that it was the right time to go, though? You know, as much as you'd have loved to gone on and had another 3 or 4 years like that 2012-13 year, yeah. it felt the natural time to go?
Yes, of course. I'd be lying to say I didn't want to stay. Of course, I wanted to stay. But like I said, I just, with like Tim Sherwood as the manager, obviously he didn't see what Paul Lambert saw in me, and I just felt like I wouldn't have a chance of playing regularly. And I had 1 year left on my contract. Again, I could have stayed, but like I said, that's not me. I want to be playing every week, and I want to be happy. And I wasn't for them 3 months, and yeah, it was definitely the right decision for myself to move on.
Was it the first time that you played against Villa for Derby that you scored? I watched that goal last night again. I think Glenn Whelan set it up, actually. I think
he tried to pass it back. I think he passed it straight to Vidra, and he crossed it, and I just had to tap in, yeah.
I've seen some great celebrations from you down the years. I've seen the kind of, you know, the sharp shooting celebration, and I've seen the hands aloft in front of the whole end and all these kind of things. I watched that Derby one against Villa last night, and I think you kind of half celebrated, didn't you?
Yeah, no, obviously I knew that if I would score, I'd try not to celebrate. But in that moment, it's hard to think of that, because when you score a goal, it's like I say, there's no better feeling. But I think I kind of hit it in the net and like turned to my right for a couple of yards, and then obviously didn't stop and like I say, held my hands up. And yeah, I didn't want to celebrate, because like I say, I still follow Villa now. I've still got a great love for them, and I was there for 8 years, so it's a long time. And they gave me obviously my chance in England, so yeah, I wouldn't celebrate.
Looking back, Andy, now, and we've got a little bit of time, you know, five years on, I think we're talking now, aren't we? How would you sum up your time at Aston Villa?
Yeah, brilliant. I wouldn't change anything. I think, like I say, coming through the youth team, I think like when you're in the youth team, obviously your dream is to play in the first team. Like, I was lucky enough to get there. Then another dream is to play in the Premier League, and I think I played over 100 games there for Villa. So yeah, it was brilliant. Like I said, of course I would have wanted it to be longer, but I think overall I only look back with happy memories, and I had a brilliant time there.
You've had a horrible year, haven't you, to be honest? I think you had the COVID diagnosis that kind of laid you low early in the summer. Then you've come back kind of raring to go, scored a couple of goals to start the season, and now you've suffered this horrible injury again. I suppose you just want to get 2020 out of the way, like most of us, and see what 2021 brings, don't you?
I think everyone does, yeah. Everyone wants to get rid of 2020. But yeah, no, I think I've kind of got over the disappointed now. I think I'm already looking forward. I am positive anyway, but I was talking about it with other people, and I think since that injury, we talked about Rapid Vienna, I don't think I've been injured since. And I think in the last 4 years, I've barely missed a training session. So if you want to look at it that way, I think I've been lucky with injuries. So I kind of think I'll be all right. I'll get through this, and hopefully I can then be fit. I missed probably most of, if not all of this season, but I'm looking forward to coming back.
It's been an absolute pleasure to catch up with you. I hope we've killed an hour of your time to move you away from Netflix documentaries and stuff like that. But like I said, thanks for the kind of the great moments that you gave us during your time at Aston Villa. And thanks for being such a thoroughly great. But I can't believe you're 29, 30. You're still, like I said to you on the messages, you're still like this young little kind of whip.
Yeah. I've still got a little bit. I'm not 30 till August, so I'll still say I'm only 29. But yeah, I'm getting there. But I think I've got a few years left in me, hopefully.
No, brilliant. Thanks for that, mate. All the best.
Perfect, no problem. Thanks, mate.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Until then, up the Villa!